Welcome to a weekend edition of 100% Canucks. John Shannon, Landon Ferraro. After the Carolina Hurricanes defeated the Vancouver Canucks 5-4 in overtime, just 31 seconds remaining in the game, when Sebastian Aho scores, beating Kevin Lankinen. Landon, what'd you make of the game?
I mean, a couple different things, I guess it would be. I think that they did a decent job of obviously keeping themselves in it. They were outshot 2-1 basically through the game, and Carolina was buzzing around. But at the same time, the Canucks did a good job of taking care of their chances when they did get them to score to get into overtime. And, you know, through overtime, they had the puck the majority of the time. They had a couple chances. They just couldn't put it in. And then Aho makes a nice move around Pettersson and makes a nice shot.
They need to create more scoring opportunities, though. I mean, I think that's a pretty obvious statement to make when you, as your point, when you consider shots on goal were 38-17 by the end of the night.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, and again, like, that's, you know, we were talking about it. Like, that's why Kevin Lankinen was signed to the deal that he was, you know, so that if Demko couldn't go, that they had a really good other option. It wasn't a huge drop-off from 1A to 1B, and Lankinen was, you know, busy early, especially. You know, there was a lot of big chances against that he had to be really good at, and, you know, did his job, and that was, you know, keep them in it and give them a chance to win the game, and he did that.
We saw a glimpse of Elias Pettersson playing the way we thought Elias Pettersson could, with the shorthanded goal and the great shot. As you talked about on the winning goal, though, Sebastian Aho beat him.
Yeah.
We're getting the good and the bad of Pettersson at times, and that must be frustrating for him and obviously for fans.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he's been so good defensively that, like, that breakdown last night, like, in overtime, just, to me, was more of, like, it was just that split-second mental error, because as soon as, you know, Aho's climbing the boards, getting higher and higher, and Pettersson's on him. And then just as they're about to get to the blue line, Pettersson cuts to the middle, like he's really worried that he's going that way, and he cuts back down and beats him. There is no reason to step to the middle. The only way, Aho, if he kept going that way, his momentum would have carried him out of the zone. Perfect. You know, like, there's no way to score when two guys are still buried deep in the zone and you're offside. There was only really one way for Aho to go, and that was cut back down the boards or go out into the neutral zone. So just hold your position behind, force him out to the middle. But as soon as he stepped, you know, Aho could see his opening and made a good tight turn. And I mean, it was a great shot. Everything about the play was totally fine, except for just that one little slip of stepping to the middle and opening up space for Aho.
It's funny. The thing that came to mind was, for me, you talked about the shot being perfect. It was almost an identical shot to what Pettersson beat Kochetkov to on the shorthanded goal. Exactly. Almost the same spot. At the same end of the ice, too. So it was one of those unfortunate things, but they did come away with a point.
Yep.
And now on to Tampa, and then on to Sunrise to play the Panthers in a back-to-back, which will not be easy. So today's guest on 100% Canucks, we had some time to talk on Thursday, to John Shorthouse, the voice on television of the Canucks. What are your first memories of John doing the job?
I would say, I mean, I just remember I was 10 when I moved to Vancouver, and the amount of coverage that the team got, like, I just felt like I was hearing his voice pretty much nonstop. You know, I was coming from Atlanta. I had to, like, actively search out hockey highlights.
Right.
You know, like I was seeing football or high school football highlights on TV before the Thrasher highlights were popping up. So like hearing Shorty, you know, especially like the amount of fun him and Cheech had in the booth together and doing their thing for a bunch of years. It was just, I just remember being in like hockey heaven coming back here, right? Like there'd be a pregame show. Then I got a couple hours of Shorty, you know, kind of setting the scene and really being the voice of the team. And then it was right into a post game show. Like there was 5 hours of coverage for every game, it seemed like. And for a kid that loved hockey, it was the best.
Yeah. Well, he is in a very exclusive club when you consider that this team now has been around for more than 50 years. And the list of people that were the play-by-play men on television is pretty darn short. And that would be Jim Robson, Jim Hewson, John Shorthouse. You'll have to throw Bernie Pascal in there, who did some work at when the games were on BCTV. But this is not over more than a half a century. A large group of people that have delivered the Canucks on television from the play-by-play booth on a regular basis. So without further ado then, we recorded this on Thursday afternoon with our pal John Shorthouse on this edition of 100% Canucks.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
Welcome back to 100% Canucks, now joined by the television voice of the hockey club, John Shorthouse, who's joining us from the road. Appreciate the time, John.
No problem. Keeps me out of trouble.
No, nothing keeps you out of trouble. Let's be honest about it. So, you know, when we started this podcast, one of the first guys we had on was Jim Robson. And first of all, you know that I've known Jim for years. But then I got thinking between Robson, Hewson, Shorthouse, and even Batchelor, there is a Vancouver sound, isn't there, when it comes to play-by-play?
I think so. And I think it all goes back to Jim Robson. I grew up on Jim. He is the reason I'm doing what I'm doing today. So, I mean, there was a brief period, it lasted about 7 minutes, where I wanted to play for the Canucks when I was growing up in Kerrisdale, playing for Honest Nats at Kerrisdale Arena. Everybody remembers Honest Nats department store, 48th and Fraser. But I was not a good skater, so I quickly decided I was not going to be.
That is a problem to be a hockey player.
I was not going to be. I was number 14 when I played out. Because I, for whatever reason, I loved Chris Odlofsson, and I wanted, because of Jim, because Jim would just tell me all these things about Chris Odlofsson, because he was great on faceoffs, and he broke his jaw once, and he came back sooner than expected, even though he was on an all-fluid diet, yada, yada. Anyway, so I decided I wanted to go into broadcasting, and it's because of Jim. I was the kind of kid who would, you know, go to bed, transistor radio under the pillow, because I wasn't supposed to be staying up, and listen to all the games. And he would take me to all these faraway places, you know, like Landover, Maryland, and wherever, all the teams that were, you know, Kansas City. Where was the Kemper Arena, John? Do you remember all these things?
Yeah, Kansas City. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I wanted to be Jim. And I grew up listening to him. And so I know when I started, Chris Cuthbert was probably the first to say to me, like, you've got a lot of Jim Robson in you. you sound a lot like Jim. And I mean, it's understandable, I guess, because he was my sort of my template. And now I listen to Batch. And it's funny because, I mean, Batch's voice is kind of like mine, too. It's not just cadence or choice of words or whatever. He actually sounds like me a little bit. And there was actually a couple of years ago, Sportsnet cut a promo. And they'd come in and they'd spend some money to shoot both of us in our different booths and while we were calling games as a promo for Canucks hockey. And there was actually one shot of me on camera and my lips are moving. But it's Batch's voice that was coming out of my mouth because obviously the editor couldn't tell the difference because they put Batch's voice into my mouth. So yeah, there's a sound. There's definitely a Vancouver sound. And you should, in fairness, mention the other guys that have come through as well. Rick Balls had a great career and he's doing a great job in Chicago. And Joey Kenward, of course, who used to do games with me when we were at 1040. So. But Jim and Jim, that was a pretty cool act to follow for me when I started back in 1998.
So when you step in 98, you know, I imagine, you know, I've never done play by play and definitely not followed in these massive footsteps. But when I stepped into the Red Wings dressing room the first time and you're like, oh, like I got to go do this. Was it almost that same feeling following those two?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky because my first year I shared duties. So I was a part-time TV guy. People don't remember that. Mm-hmm. My first year in 1998, I did 30 games on Sportsnet because I think Sportsnet had just gotten a national package as well as a regional package, but the Canucks didn't want – there was some conflict for Houston where they didn't want him doing certain games at certain times. So I actually did 30 games on TV my first year, and then I did some games on radio, and then I hosted on radio for the other ones. But what really made it easy for me to step into the role was that I got to travel with these guys. And actually mm-hmm. for the 1 year, Jim Robson only worked one more year after I started. And he did that for VTV, which is now CTV Vancouver, I guess. But VTV was a new station that launched. They got the Canucks local rights. And I got to sit next to Jim Robson on the plane for a year. He was my seatmate. So that was cool. I mean, that kind of helped, you know, me ease my way into the role. And Jim Houston was in and out, but he was around as well. And I do owe him a pretty large debt. Because I know that Jim, at the end of the day, played a role in me getting the job. Because I really, and people hate to hear this, particularly people who have toiled at this for a long time, I didn't really have any play-by-play experience. I had a little bit of informal experience on my own into a tape recorder from the rafters or from my basement or whatever. But all I had was some broadcast experience doing scores and highlights. And Jim Houston, who I'd met and talked to and kind of, you know, bonded with, talked to Tom Plasteris, who was the program director at CKNW, and he suggested that I might be a guy to take a flyer on. And thank God Tom did, because that was 28 years ago and we're still going. So, and I don't want to stop anytime soon.
Now, like, it sounds like you had some really good support when you're first starting. And, you know, I started in filling in doing the radio color last season. And the first time I was, you know, obviously nervous coming into the gondola and coming into your guys' world. And you guys had that feeling of, like, I belong there and it was supported. Was it that same feeling and you've tried to carry that on from when you started?
Maybe. First of all, it's just nice to get an injection of youth into our industry. So,
you know, youth usually is like teenagers, not people as old as Landon, though.
Yeah. Well, okay. Fair enough. But Landon
up
feels
there,
like
though,
youth.
I'm killing it in the young department.
He really is. By the way, you did a great job on the I don't get to hear you a lot because we're often doing the same games, but you did a hell of a job on the Abbotsford series in the Calder Cup finals.
You guys really get a room or something? Come on. What's going on?
I have one. I'm in Raleigh. But I really enjoyed that. But I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I've been surrounded by great people. I've worked with great people. And it's not just the guys that I succeeded, like Jim and Jim, who have been great influences on my life and have taught me so much about the industry. But the people I've worked with, you know, I've had the absolute honor of being partnered with Tom Larscheid and John Garrett, Ryan Walter, Dave Tomlinson, Ray Ferraro, whoever I'm missing, Michael Bublé.
He did a game.
But it's, you know, it's just all people that are really good at what they do, really like being at work, but don't take it too seriously, right? And like everyone kind of has a basic understanding that we're not changing the world. We're just providing entertainment and doing a job that people would kill for, right? Like, yeah. I mean, honestly, and that's always my answer. People say, how's it going? You know, or the team's having a tough year, whatever. It's just like, you know what? It beats working. It really beats working for a living.
Sitting on the plane with Robson.
Yeah. With his cardboard.
Thank goodness for dry cleaning. You have a cardboard, you know, dry cleaning cardboard. That's what Bob Cole used to use too, John.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Can I explain so people understand?
Sure.
So Jim, I don't know where you came from the dry cleaner, I guess, but he had a piece of cardboard for each team.
Yeah.
Whoever was playing that night. And then he had a multicolored pen and he would make his notes on this little piece of cardboard for each team. And I don't do the same. I don't use cardboard. But I, you know, from his scorebook, his handwritten scorebook, to the way he did his notes, to the way he provided information or kind of called a play or, mm-hmm. you know, built up as a play was developing. You know, a lot of that has.
Do you have your score sheet? Do you have your sheets in front of you there?
They're holding my phone up, but yeah.
Oh, they are. Okay. There you go. So you have that awful scribble like Robson and Houston have too, right?
Can you see that?
Yeah.
I don't even know what game that is. That's an exhibition game in Edmonton from September.
That's a keeper right there.
And it's really that left-hand column. The left-hand column, which is where all the little anecdotes are, that the only person can read that writing is you.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jim didn't have as much support as I did when he was often, you know, when he started, he was by himself. There was no like color guy. And so he would often, if there was a scoring play, he'd just write down the number.
Yeah.
So he'd write down the number of the player who got the goal, the number of the players who got the assist. And then later he'd go in and fill in the names. You know, we're so spoiled these days. We have so many people supporting us. I can just hand my book over to Curtis or to Griff working with me in Vancouver and they'll fill in the scoring play if it's getting really hairy, you know, but I have a radio background. And so I do, you know, I keep score as I go. And the left-hand column is key, you know, it's Jim's left-hand column is a little different because he had different things he had to get to. He had to get to a special hello mm-hmm. and he always had the weather written down.
Sure.
You know, the temperature, the high, the low, whether it was cloudy or balmy or whatever. I don't have that, but I have so many of the things that he had because he is sort of my influence.
So I'm going to ask this question and then we want to talk about your career. But at this point, if I said you're going to make the same amount of money to do a radio game or a TV game, you would pick?
Like on a one-off?
Well, no, like if I said I'm going to
get... I would pick radio. Okay, I'll tell you this. If I was going to make the same amount of money, I would probably pick radio because I get to do every game.
Yeah, but at the same time, you also, you're a descriptive guy. And radio is a, you know, theater of the mind.
Well, we're going to go back to Robson again.
Right.
Because when I got the TV job, he intentionally took me aside and said, listen, there's something I need to tell you. And that's, I, you know, back in the day, I transitioned from radio to TV and back and forth. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't change much, change a little. But he said, Canadians in particular, they like a frenetic, descriptive radio call. So don't try to dumb it down and don't try to be conversational beyond, you know, what's comfortable, because people want you to just describe the game and what's going on. Because that's, I don't know, at the time, that's what they grew up on. And so don't change too much. So,
well, in fact, I would tell you right now, as a guy who worked with Jim for a long time as well, Jim did change, and actually changed too much, because he thought by going to television, and anybody under the age of 50 will have to Google this guy's name, he thought Ray Scott was the way to do it. And Ray Scott was the most simple of television broadcasters, particularly when it came to his sport, which was the National Football League. And Jim thought that that's what he should do early on in television. And it was quite frankly, it was a terrible mistake, because Jim Robson's play-by-play was the trademark Robson play-by-play. And he should have never changed.
And maybe that's why he took me aside.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, perhaps. maybe he felt that he had gone to, I don't know, because I never had an issue with it. I love listening to Jim Robson. Listen, I love listening to Jim Robson. Like, I love listening to Vin Scully.
Right.
Like, I love listening to Dan Shulman today. And so for years, before he passed, well, before he retired, subsequently passed, before I would call my first preseason game in September, I would always go out of my way to watch a Dodgers game. Wow. Because I wanted to hear Vin. Because I just think he's a masterclass in what we do. And to me, in terms of just sort of all overall ability and I don't even know how to describe it, but if I was going to do that today in September, I would probably just watch Dan Shulman, because I just think he is, you know, the creme de la creme right now. Because it's not just, I know this year is a little different because everybody became a Blue Jays fan for like a month.
Even you?
Because of Cheech. I don't think Cheech and Sharon missed it. I'm not kidding, John. I don't think they missed a pitch this year.
Oh, no. You guaranteed.
Like, I think they watched a beautiful sunny day, Vancouver. You know, what do you want to do? Should we go to the beach? No. Barrios is starting. You know, let's. anyway, because a lot of people who only grew to know Dan Shulman in the last month or two, he is so able to do so many things, and his college basketball season is just starting now. And so anyway, I just, my appreciation for guys who do what I do isn't limited to hockey. That's for sure. And Vin Scully was a guy, again, I would go out of my way just to watch a Dodgers game every September. I might be sitting in my hotel room in Calgary, because invariably the Canucks were playing Calgary in a preseason game. I would watch a Dodgers game just to sort of give me that feel and that, yeah, man, I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to do this because this is what it could be.
So, Atlanta, I'll let you jump in here in a second, but I got to tell you.
That's okay.
This is our wheelhouse. This is
I'm fine just hanging out.
Going to dinner, you know, Landon. This is just like going to dinner. So there's a Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah.
That every time it's on, I have to watch.
Please tell me it's not Draft Day.
No, it's not Draft Day, because the Seahawks get screwed, so that's okay. But no, it's For the Love of the Game, the baseball movie with he plays Billy Chappell, and I watch it, and then it's a silly love story, but I don't watch it for Kevin Costner. I don't watch it for the love story. Vin does play by play through the whole game. And he is absolutely magical in that. And he makes the 2 hours so much fun to listen to.
No, I don't know what to say. I mean, there was just something about him. For so many years, he worked alone. That was always Larside's joke, by the way. Hey, Shorty, you're just dying to do one alone, aren't you? it's just he was a special, and baseball's the hardest. Can we be honest?
You think?
Oh yeah, without question. Because
why?
Because I'm not a storyteller. I'm not, and you might be surprised by this as I, wheel my way through your podcast here, but I'm not a real conversationalist. Hockey's great for me because it's start, stop, frenetic, shut up, other guy talks, drop the puck, go again. Baseball is just so much weaving and storytelling, and it's just not my thing. I would struggle with that. You know, basketball, sure. Football, probably. Golf, just because, I understand it enough. But baseball, that's the tough one for me.
Wow.
So you showed us your notebook there. Like, how long does your prep take for each game?
I mean, if you're going to boil it down, a few hours, I guess. So I every September, I start on the 1st, and I do a boilerplate sheet, if you will, for each team. And at that point, you're still guessing who's going to be on the final roster, but it's usually, oddly enough, pretty accurate by the time you finally see the team later in the season. But so, yeah, I do the shell of a Word document for each team in September. So that takes probably an hour per team. So there's 32 hours. And then as the game approaches, I'll start to, and we're so spoiled now, man. Like, we can watch every game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We can, and if we missed it, we can go back and watch it because it's archived. And we have access to a special channel, basically, that allows us to either watch the game live, watch a condensed version of the game, watch a highlight package from the game, or just rewatch the game. And so as your date with that team approaches, you'll start to pay more attention to them. We also have a service. We're so spoiled compared to the way it used to be. So there's a service called SportsScan, and we get emailed to us in a single document every single article that is written about every team in every daily or every website across North America. And that's in one package. And you can just, it's hundreds of pages every day, but you can read it. And then the league puts out, again, we're very spoiled because when I started like 28 years ago, we didn't have the comprehensive game notes that we do now.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, it's...
Hey, listen, when you started, they probably were only doing stats once a week.
Right. Well, I'm not that old, John.
Well, I am.
But my point is that I think at this point in the year 2025, you're only as prepared as you're prepared to be. Like, you have all the resources at your fingertips. And so I probably over-prepare. I think everybody says this. You talk to any play-by-play guy. We do and update things we probably will never look at, even over the course of the entire year, but just in case. Mm-hmm. Just in case this arises, or just in case the glass breaks, or this, that, or the other thing. So to answer your question, Landon, probably an hour on each team in September, and then leading up to the game, I'll watch at least the highlights of their games leading up, and then I'll probably put like 90 minutes to 2 hours into that specific game just to get ready for that team that night.
Yeah, like, I was always blown away watching my dad do his prep, and now me starting to do my stuff, but I just assume, and rightfully so, like, the amount you guys have to know getting through a broadcast, like, the names that get chucked at you and you've got to get them out. The one that got me the other night was
Del Bell Blues.
I kept forgetting the bell, just Del Blues. But like, you guys are so good at being able to get through that. Like, how long did it take doing games before you felt comfortable that you could get through it without having to like fully stress?
I can't even answer that.
You get nervous?
No, but I mean, September every year.
But like for instance, you're gonna do the game in Tampa, and you're gonna do the game in Sunrise. When you're 30 seconds to air, you're not nervous?
No, I'm not. I'm a little nervous about Tampa though, because I finally like sat down. So today, I don't know when this airs, but or when you post it, but today is a Thursday, and we play Tampa on Sunday.
Right.
And I finally took my first updated look at their roster today.
Mm.
There's a lot of guys on there that are not household names.
That's right.
So that's
what Saturday's for.
Today I'm a little bit nervous having gone through it. And I went through them and I went through Florida, even though the game I have most impending is Carolina tomorrow. I've already gone through Carolina and Tampa and Florida because those are the three on this trip. I get nervous in September. So everyone talks about the dream, right? The dream they have, whether you're a professor or a student or whatever the stereotypical dream you have. Every fall, I have a nightmare, and I'm not making this up. This happens routinely on a yearly basis. Is that a cat or a dog? What do you got?
No, I have both here with me. One okay. is named Gary and one is named Gordy. So,
oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to get...
No, that's fine. People on YouTube see it, so...
So I have this dream every fall that I'm at the rink, the game is starting, and I can't find my way to the booth. Every year. And so, I mean, you talk about nerves. There's the nerves part. Are there moments where you get nervous? Sure. But I feel confident enough in my abilities that if you give me enough lead time, and in fact, I think we've all proved this, much to the detriment of our industry, that we can call a game off this TV here in my hotel room, right?
Do you bite your tongue?
No, I'm just saying. Like,
I know. You guys did yourself such a disservice during the pandemic that you made it look too easy.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, we have so many talented guys, and it's, I mean, if you know what you're doing, and people always say, how do you do it? You know, but if you know, it's not that hard. And in fact, I'll tell you this, when all you have is a monitor, and people say, well, you must have all these different angles, and then we're watching, when we call a game off the monitor, we're watching exactly what you see at home, mm-hmm. right? Like nothing different. It actually forces you to pay closer attention. Because you can't get distracted by a scuffle in the stands or, you know, guys mixing it up behind the play. Mm-hmm. You almost do a better job of calling the most pertinent. I really am doing a disservice here, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
But in terms of, you know, because as play-by-play people, we are trained puck watchers. And that's the one thing the camera does is it stays on the puck generally. Mm-hmm. And it almost forces you to pay even more rapt attention than you might normally if you have, you know, the full purview of the rink or the stands or whatever. So, yeah, I can't even remember how this answer started or what the question was. I think it was about nervousness or just angst. And I don't really. Except for September. Every September, I will question whether or not I still remember how to do this. And that's about it. And then once I get a game or two into the preseason, which thank goodness is going to be cut back next year, because once I'm a game and a half into the preseason, I'm like, okay, I'm good. You know, we're good. Yeah. Let's start. You know, I remember how to do this.
The guys are saying the same thing, right? Like after game or two, they're like, all right, we're good. Let's move this along. I guess my next way to go here, like watching you from up in the booth, you come up, you say you're not a conversationalist, but you have a presence and people like when you're around. How important is it to you to have fun while doing the broadcast? Because I mean, you've mentioned it a little bit, but at the same time, going up there, like, you seem to generally enjoy yourself, and you said you have, you know, you basically don't have a job, right? Like, you get to do something you love. But it comes through in your broadcast, how much you enjoy what you're doing. Has it been hard to keep that up, or is that just naturally in you doing it?
I think I've been blessed with the people I work with, because I look forward to being with them. It's like a second family. It's a cliche, but it really is, because you spend so much time together. Like, I'm on a stretch right now where I did opening night, then I didn't do the next two, and now I'm on a stretch of calling 32 in a row. And so, you know, you get into a rhythm. But I think that I've seen both sides of it when you do this long enough. So this is my 28th year. My first year was actually a great year to cut your teeth on. When you think about it, the Canucks had 58 points. They started the year with Mike Keenan as coach. They finished the year with Mark Crawford as coach. It was a disastrous season results wise, but I was just in heaven. What do you mean? I get to watch hockey and call games for a living, and I get to see North America on someone else's dime. I get days off on the road. I can just go and sightsee. And that was before my program director, who I mentioned earlier, Tom Plasteris. I did my last game. I don't know what it was. And obviously they missed the playoffs with 58 points, but I did my last game, I think around April 6th or whatever. And I was in the office to, you know, just tie up some loose ends. And he was like, "Well, see you in September." I was like, "What?" Like, I hadn't even thought of that. All I wanted was the job. I didn't even think about the 5 months off in the summer. So that was, I mean, again, it just so cool. But in terms of having fun, I've seen both sides, right? So that first year was something else. It was 58 points, but I couldn't have cared less. I was having so much fun. I was sitting next to Jim Robson on the charter. I was seeing the North America on someone else's dime, like I said. But you do go through periods. So then we had the period there from the kind of like the early 2000s until 2013. They made the playoffs 10 out of 12 years, I think. With AV as coach, you were guaranteed a second round, because that team always won in the first round. I think they won every first round series, if I'm not mistaken, until the last one when he was dismissed. And now you go to a period like now, you know, where I think they've missed 9 of the last 12. And, you know, it's the same thing. You show up, you enjoy your job, you call the game, and you enjoy the people you're with, and you try to have fun. Mm-hmm. There has to be some fun involved. There has to be some levity. You know, if the goalie turns to throw on the brakes and his skates make a fart sound, well, goddamn, I'm going to blame Cheech for it. You know what I mean? Like,
as you did.
Like, you get, it's not, you know, the cliche is, it's not brain surgery, it's not rocket science, whatever cliche you want to throw out there. We're watching hockey.
Yeah.
And yeah, it matters. It matters to a lot of people. And there's, you know, jobs on the line. And, you know, for some people it is, you know, not life or death, but whatever is next after that. But you have to have fun and realize that you're in the candy store of life when it comes to doing a job, because it just doesn't feel like a job all the time.
Favorite city
is, so this is like the, remember the draft in the '80s, and we're like, okay, but Gretzky, you can't draft Gretzky.
Yeah. You can't. You can't pick Vancouver.
I can't pick Vancouver, but can you pick New York?
Yeah, sure. You can, just because you have lunch with Oberman every time. Sure.
It's becoming more and more dodgy.
I'll tell him you said that.
No, I didn't mean that. No, I just, you know, you just, with the climate in the world these days. In New York, I love Boston. I love Chicago. I've been blessed. I've been to Stockholm. I've been to Helsinki for as part of the World Cup. People don't realize this about me, but when I was 11, I lived in China for a year. And I got to go back a few years ago. The Canucks played a couple games in Beijing and Shanghai, so that was cool. I was able to brush up my Mandarin.
And how is your Mandarin?
You're able to say Mandarin?
It's Mama Hoo Hoo. It's not great. But I mean, I can order a beer, you know, Woyo Yiping Piju. Or I can find a bathroom, which is very similar, you know, Cisol Zainar. But in terms of holding a conversation, I would much rather rely on my French.
What are you reading? Any books?
I don't, you know what? I'm not a reader. I'll just come right out and say it. I can really fudge my way through this, but I'm not.
I figured airplanes were reading time.
Once Netflix came through with the downloadable, right? Before you had to be online.
Okay, so what are you watching?
I'm just watching season 3 of The Diplomat.
Wow.
I just finished episode 2 on the flight yesterday. I want to watch Black Rabbit. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I hear that Bateman. One's good.
Yeah, have you watched Slow Horses?
No.
Oh,
good show.
Slow really? Horses. Five. Yeah. There's 5 seasons of it. Gary Oldman is in it. It is spectacular.
I watch a lot of documentaries.
Yeah.
I talked on the broadcast. I'll watch anything, but like the broadcast the other day, because I was talking about the whole Thatcher Demko situation in Vancouver and how it was like a telenovela. And I was like, how do I know the word telenovela? Well, I have a daughter and I've watched every episode of Jane the Virgin.
Hey, I went through the majority of that the year that I had my big surgery. I was sitting in Iowa by myself, gone through every show. I started watching. Not bad.
Not bad. Hey. And certainly if you're just trying to entertain yourself with like a 11, 12 year old daughter.
Yeah. See, I don't have the 11 or 12 year old. It was just a 30 year old sitting by himself watching. Just like,
okay, that's kind of weird.
Hey, listen, I promised you 30 minutes. We've gone a little longer. Appreciate your time, John. We'll do it again.
Yeah. So I hope I didn't mess this up. I just wanted to, come through and not let you down. So.
It might end up being our last one with your performance, but we'll see how it goes.
I think I said a swear at one point. So
that's what an awful thing to do on a podcast.
See you, boys.
John Shorthouse. Landon, I'll be back after this on 100% Canucks.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here. Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
So, Landon, I was one of those guys like John. Transistor radio, fuzzy signal in the Okanagan Valley, and you could listen to, even before they got to the NHL, the WHL, the old Western Pro League on CKWX. The Canucks with Jim Robson, and then obviously CKNW with Robson for oh so many years, before I got to work with Robson for more than a decade, and it was that was kind of cool. So it's on to Tampa for the Lightning, who I'm still not sure what Tampa is. They have the great parts, you know. Vasilevsky's at times still Vasilevsky. Victor Hedman is great. Kucherov, Braden Point has not had a good season. Anthony Cirelli has been hurt. Brendan Hagel has been hotter than a pistol of late. But then there's a lot of other people that you look at the roster and you say, hey, as John did, I'm not sure who these guys are. And they seem to be succeeding at times in a division that Atlantic that I'm not sure we can define really.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a pretty good way of putting it. It's a team that, you know, in some ways are, you know, really in transition, as, you know, their core is still sitting there, but, you know, there's been quite a different, you know, bit of movement for the bottom six and some of the D. And, you know, and then, you know, a big piece of that is Vasilevskiy as well, right? Like, you know, he isn't the absolute dominant force he was a few years ago, but you're right. Like, he, it does pop up from time to time, and that's a tough guy to beat. You know, I think for Vancouver going in and playing them again, I mean, it's such a easy thing to say because it's true, you know, pretty much every night, but like, if you don't give them easy offense, make them earn what they get, like, it's not the same firepower it was a few years ago. If you can stay off the penalty kill, don't give them power plays and don't give them easy offense, like, you've got a real good chance, and you got to play them hard. You know, they still have that fire, like that quick hit offense, like, you know, can take advantage of a turnover for sure. But like, there's more weakness in their game than there has been in the past.
Well, I you know, it's one of those things where you look at what the Canucks did in Raleigh on Friday night. I don't think you can question their work ethic. I think they tried to work as hard. You know, there are still some great signs. I thought Filip Hronek had a hell of a game. They've put a lot of pressure on him, particularly when Quinn Hughes, is out of the lineup, it changes the whole personality of the hockey club. And obviously with Thatcher Demko now going down, that's a ton of pressure to put on, more pressure to put on Lankinen. And then there's obviously this back-to-back. I would suspect we're going to see Patera in one of the two games, aren't you?
You will for sure. I don't think there's any chance you see Lankinen in 3 and 4 here. Like, it's a lot to ask of him.
Well, with Demko going on IR, he's not eligible to come back to the club until at least Tuesday. So that will
be, it sounds like it's going to be longer than that anyway. So, I mean, they've got to prepare for Patera's starts, and, you know, hopefully Tolopilo down in Abbotsford gets playing here quickly and after his little injury as well. And they have some backups for Lankinen.
Well, it will be fascinating to watch. We talked about when the road trip started, 1-1-1 would be viewed as a success, I think. Yep. And they got the third one. I'm not sure that they wanted to get just the third one in Raleigh on Friday night, but they got the third one, and now it's tough pressure. By the way, both the Panthers and the Lightning, if the playoffs started today, they would be outside of the playoff window. So it's not as
it's
if
tight this year.
Oh, it's such a strange season. It is such a strange season. All right, Landon, thanks for this. Thanks to John Shorthouse, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thanks for listening and watching this edition of 100% Canucks.